and you're listening to Radio Regent. My name is Molly, a.k.a. Docu Vixen. This is Saturday Morning Live. And we're now going to go to diasporic music with Norman Otis Richmond. It'll make me say, my father in heaven is watching you. But I still love you like I do. And no, 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 nobody's ever gonna love you like I do. Say, no one's ever gonna love you like I do. No one's ever gonna love you like I do. No one's ever gonna love you like I do. I don't know why I do, but I do. Yes, I do. Oh, there's a woman in me that keeps on loving you. I don't know why.
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada, and I style myself as a bluesologist. We were listening to our good friend, Betty Wright, and Betty Wright, like I said, the first article that I wrote where I got paid, it was an article that I did on her, Betty Wright, out of Miami, Florida, who spent a lot of time with Bob Marley. She was with Bob Marley. She opened up a Bob Marley show, shows all over Africa. And the last time I saw Mr. Marley in Toronto, Canada, at Maple Leaf Gardens, Ms. Wright's bus was parked outside, and I had a brief chant, a brief moment with her. And she is was very close to my good friend Dick Griffey, and Betty Wright is one of my favorite people. But right now we are getting ready to talk about the late, great Chokwe Lumumba, and joining me on the line is Kali Akuno, who is an organizer, educator, and a writer for Human Rights and Justice. He is an organizer for the Malcolm X grassroots movement. He was a former co-director of the U.S. Human Rights Network. He also served as the executive director of People's Hurricane Relief Fund based in New Orleans, Louisiana, and after Hurricane Katrina. He is a co-founder of the School of Social Justice and Community Development. That was a public school. That was a organization that was geared towards low-income African-American and Latino communities in Oakland, California. And Brother Akuno is presently the coordinator for the special for special projects and external funding for Mayor Chokwe Lumumba in Jackson, Mississippi. And Chokwe Lumumba recently joined the ancestors, and that's what we're going to be talking about, Chokwe Lumumba's contribution to the African liberation movement. And Chokwe was about Africa, Africans, and all oppressed people. And Kali Akuno, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, doing all right. Pleasure to be here.
Now, Chokwe Lumumba, how this is completely took everybody by surprise. What kind of hell was Brother Chokwe in? This was unexpected. What I'm saying, right? Am I saying what?
Yeah, this was unexpected. I mean, he anyone who's put in a lot of work in the struggle, lived as long as he lives, by the conditions that he lived under, had some health challenges. He was definitely receiving some treatment around some kidney issues that he had. But there was no indication that he was ill of any serious magnitude or that anything of this nature was on the horizon. And last, when many of us spoke to him and talked to him, saw him in person, you know, it was totally unexpected to him. Almost to the very last hour, he was working. Even though he was in the hospital, he was calling folks and checking in on meetings and was giving everyone the impression, you know, that he would be back to work after taking a little bit of rest in the next couple of days. You know, so it was a surprise to him. And I think what he had the normal understanding of where he was at the time to anyone. And we certainly did not expect it. I knew early Tuesday morning, you know, that he went to the hospital. But the word was, you know, from those who were directly with him at that time, that it was nothing serious. And then some of the later word, 2 o'clock, and he went about 9 o'clock in the morning, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, when a group of folks had came back and we were supposed to be in some, you know, continuous immediate and some work, that he was doing all right and that everything was looking pretty good. He just needed to get some minor medical things kind of attended to while he was in the hospital. We was expecting to come out. So about 5:30, when I got the news that he had transitioned, it was a total shock.
This is kind of a tough question, but is there any suspected foul play?
You know, there's a lot of suspected foul play. I would be lying if I didn't say that hasn't come up, hasn't popped up in a lot of folks' minds. You know, where, how, when, you know, until we do a thorough investigation, you know, most of us are kind of leaving that subject alone. But, you know, just given our people's history, there's plenty enough reason to be suspect and to, you know, be concerned, you know. So I think we'll be foolish not to be concerned or not have certain kind of suspicions. But we need to do our homework, you know, do a thorough autopsy, trace the last couple of days, you know, a number of different things of that nature, and really do an assessment before putting someone out there. We don't want to make any premature, you know, speculations or feed conspiracy theories that are unnecessary because they wind up being a detraction from the work that has to go forward. But we are doing an investigation.
Now, I'm speaking with Kali Okuno, the coordinator for special projects and the external, he's the coordinator for special projects and external funding for Mayor Chokwe Lumumba. Now, the situation is, historically, Chokwe Lumumba was born in Detroit, Michigan, and he has the Republic of New Africa. He was, give us Chokwe's history for those who don't know it.
Yeah, I mean, he's was born in Detroit, as you mentioned, primarily grew up there, was born in 1947, you know, spent most of his young adult life in the Detroit area. His folks are primarily from Alabama and some other places from the South, part of that trek up to up South, as many people called it. And he was a product of their folks, you know, generation that kind of came of age in the early to mid-60s, came to full consciousness in adulthood and picked up on the mass struggle of our people fighting against white supremacy, apartheid, and U.S. colonialism and imperialism. And he picked up that torch in Detroit, which at that time, you know, was one of really the hotbeds of black revolutionary organization thought and activity. And he joined very early the Republic of New Africa and became an officer, even the vice president in the 1970s, following the lead of the late Amaro Bedelli and his leadership. He was here in Mississippi, came down with Amaro in Mississippi in 1971 to establish the on-the-ground capital of the Republic. He was in and around all the intimidation and harassment that the government of Mississippi and the FBI and everybody tried to impose, which eventually led to a shootout in August of 1971 that resulted in a case, the RNA 11 case. And it was from that case in particular that he was encouraged to go back to law school, get his degree, and to be of some service to the movement in that direction, directly from elders like Queen Mother Moore and Annie Mar. He went back to Detroit, back to Wayne State University, got his degree, stayed up there disorganizing for a while, but eventually made a strategic choice to come and move to Mississippi to continue the ongoing work of organizing on the land, organizing what many was called the New African National Territory, to help further towards liberation. And that's what he spent the last 30-plus years of his adult life doing here in Mississippi, working in a number of different capacities, not just, you know, as the one of the founders of the New African People's Organization and the Mockman's Grassroots Movement, but as a revolutionary or people's lawyer, as a basketball coach. You know, there was a number of different ways in which he tried to engage with the community, particularly with young folks, as a very strategic part of the movement, but also just in terms of being someone concerned about youth development. It was something he was always very concerned with, just both personally and politically, understanding the necessity of developing youth for the continuity and the ongoing, you know, longevity of the struggle. So that's what he had spent, I would say, the greater portion of his adult life doing here in Mississippi. And it was the organization, myself and several others, who encouraged him to run for office in 2009. It's not something he had a personal ambition in doing or ever saw himself doing. It was something that we thought made some strategic sense, given a few factors that were on the radar screen post-Katrina. And we kind of put him to the task from an organizational standpoint. And first he ran for city council, then he ran for mayor, successful at both. You know, and then what we were working on and what he was trying to work on one division of through the political wing was executing what we call the Jackson Kush Plan. And so that is trying to implement that in various ways, I think, is the lasting legacy. I think the last 6 or 7 months people should remember, and that's what we're going to try and focus on building here in Jackson from this point forward.
I'm speaking with Kali Okuno. Now, some of the people he defended were like, I know he defended everyday people, but, you know, he worked with a lot of people that had status in the African liberation movement, and even people that had status in the entertainment movement. I guess he worked with the Sata, and he worked with Tupac Shakur. Who were some of the
that's
people
right,
he worked with?
Right. Oh, he worked, I mean, with Mutulu.
That's Tupac's stepfather.
Yeah. He worked with folks on from the Black Liberation Army, from some of the Brinks cases that happened up in New York. He defended the Pontiac Eight folks and some of that struggle that was going on against solitary confinement and the torture that was going on there. He defended, you know, more recently, successfully, the Scott sisters and Jackson released here in Jackson, Mississippi. Gladys and Janice and got them released. And then one of the last major kind of public cases that he had been working on was Buju Banton's case, which he had to give up.
Buju Banton, the Jamaican artist. Oh, I didn't know that.
That's right. Yeah, he was working in his defense down in Florida. So, you know, he was doing a lot of work, but most of his work was really, you know, young brothers and sisters here in Jackson who just got caught up, you know, in the system, trying to make a living and hustling. So one way or another, you know, to survive, that's who the bedrock of his clients were. And most of that, you know, he covered out of his own pocket. You know, not that the brother was ever that well off in any form or fashion. Folks, they have no illusions about that. But, you know, that was just all part of his commitment as a people's lawyer. And people should note that, you know, it was Tupac and aside from those folks who came to him, you know, knowing his work and knowing him in many respects in case of Tupac. And Fahey and those folks had been working with him, way back in the 70s when Fahey and Matulu had came upon the FBI files, the COINTELPRO files, to start the campaign in the 70s to start educating folks about that even before the church commissioned in those hearings came about and how that whole movement that they were working on with Fahey and Matulu helped spawn the creation of what Chokwe was ahead, the National Coalition, the Black Coalition for Human Rights, you know, which started in the late 1970s that Chokwe was ahead of, that argued the case of Asada and argued the case of folks like Sekou Odinga and Kwasi Balogun and all of those folks. So, you know, there's a long, long history that we, I think, many of us are going to have to take some time, of course, this next several weeks and months, to thoroughly document, so you know that legacy of struggle and the lessons from it are lost to future generations.
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting Chokwe in 1990 in Harlem. There was the Malcolm X conference in Harlem, and I guess I don't know, maybe 5,000 people from all over the world were there, and I stayed in the same place with Chokwe, you know, for one day. And I basically, I lived in Detroit, but everybody that talks about Chokwe, even the people that he disagreed with politically, liked him as a person. Even Kilu and Yasha put something up on Facebook saying that, you know, she had met him, and, you know, they basically talked about politics, and, you know, they disagreed on some stuff, but she said he was the, in terms of arguing with someone, she said that he was like the most approachable and most likable guy. One of the most likable guys she ever met. And a lot of people have said that.
That's true to Chokwe. I mean, he can make some fierce arguments. He could argue down, but he did it in such a style that you never felt put off,
right,
or that he didn't care about you. And that he wasn't just out to win an argument to be winning an argument, you know. If he believed in something, he believed in it. But he was somebody who, and I always felt, in the years I know him, was willing to be challenged, willing to be pushed, and what I always appreciated about him and was that he was willing to learn from younger folks, you know, from youth, who were challenging from ideas you know, be open to hearing about, you know, this is how we are experiencing this phenomenon. Not with any disrespect to its history or what its genesis may have been, you know, but perceptions change over time and from generation to generation based upon their experience and their conditions, et cetera. He was always open to hearing that, you know. He was always open, and, you know, as someone who founded the Malcolm X grassroots movement, he was always open to those of us who were younger and some leadership, you know, trying to carry some of the work forward to let us make our own mistakes. You know, not some that were, you know, totally detrimental to the organization, but for us to get out there and experiment, you know.
Right.
What I always appreciated about him was that when he was wrong, and his analysis on something, he would say he was wrong once he was pushed back or we'd done some work. So, you know, you were right, you know, I think y'all called that right. And he was also really good in, you know, checking in on clearly certain things that he had said, I don't think that's going to work. He had a good style of kind of checking in with you to see how it was going without telling you, hey, that's not working. He would just go, what do we need to do to improvement? What do you think about this? You know, he had a great personal feel intact, and I think he was he had a very developmental approach, which you don't see, I think, from a lot of folks who have aspires to leadership and have exercised a certain level of leadership within organizations, like ours. Just not something that you see too often. I think it's something we all, need to learn from going forward.
I'm speaking with Kale Kuno. Worked with the late Chokwela Mobonao. When is there, how long is the current administration going to be in power, and what is going to take place in terms of what is next for people who, in your administration?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in all honesty, our administration is over. I mean, we will have those of us like myself who were employed, by the city of Jackson under the Mobile administration, the current interim mayor, Mr. Tillman, he has already made the pledge, and I don't see him reneging on that in any form or fashion, that, folks will have employment until such time as a new administration comes into place. But, we want everybody to be clear that, in effect, outside of one of our own running for office and assuming that, that our...
When you say one of your own, you're talking so ideologically one of your own.
Ideologically one of our own, but also, we're working. I'm not going to speak too much to it right now, but we are working and strategizing and putting some pieces together to intervene in that race and to potentially even run somebody to continue on that work within the state level. So that is taking place.
Okay.
But just speaking practically and honestly, I just want people to know that while a few of us, including myself, may have some employment for the next 45 to 60 days, absent of someone from the Malcolm X grassroots movement or the People's Assembly winning office, our administration is over. Now, we need to separate our administration from what, the vision and the goals were and what the campaigns and initiatives were because, while there was a great deal of interplay and a certain degree of interdependency on having a favorable administration in the form of the Lumumba administration supporting, backing some of these initiatives, the reality of the situation was we knew at best, it was he was going to be here 4 years and then have to run for re-election if we so chose that we thought it was expedient to do that. And if he ran again and won, you're only talking about an eight-year period. And the real work of the type of transformation of the economy and the political system that we're talking about doing here in Jackson is going to take far more than 8 years. So, this was to really create more space, create more favorable conditions, but that struggle still has to go forward, with him here or not here. Now we're under the conditions that he's not here, and we're going to have to keep pressing forward, with the work. And so one of the main initiatives that we were looking to unveil over the course of the next couple of months was some work around developing a solidarity economy, through the development of worker co-ops here in Jackson. And we were pushing that through a conference called the Jackson Rise, the New Economies Conference. And that's going to be in May 2nd through May 4th. And we encourage
that's
everybody
still take
from...
Place, right?
That's still taking place. Ain't nothing
right.
We're going forward full steam ahead. That's happening. We encourage everybody who's in earshot of this, whether you're in Florida or Toronto, to come on down, because it's definitely going to have a different character and a broader character than it did initially under the new conditions. But it's going forward, and this is how we are really trying to serve notice on the different political factions and interests, in Jackson and in the region, that we fully intend to carry forward the vision of the Jackson-Cush plan. There ain't nothing changed there. It was a collective vision. It remains a collective vision, and we're going to push it forward.
In 1983, I went to Jackson, Mississippi, I guess. I went there. At that particular time, I was working with for Charles Tisdale, the Jackson Advocate, which was one of the best African American weeklies ever. And what is it? We have about 5 minutes left. What does Jackson look like now? The demographics of Jackson, Mississippi. How many people are there? Is the African? What's the African? Mm-hmm. What is the Euro-American and the Asians and the who? What does Jackson look like?
There's roughly over 200,000 people in the city of Jackson. It's the capital of Mississippi. It's over 80% black, even by the U.S. Census, it's over 80% black. The other 20%, the vast majority of that is white or European American. But there is a growing immigrant population. You have a growing number of professionals here from the Indian subcontinent and from the continent of Africa, particularly Nigeria and Ghana. You also have a small but growing Latino immigrant population, and that's divided into folks who are here on HB1 visas, the more the professional folks that the system allows in, but also folks who draw more from the working class and who tend to come more from areas like Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, in the case of Mississippi. But that's relatively small. You're talking about maybe at present 2-3% of the population of Jackson. So
right.
You're largely dealing with Jackson with primarily a black and white type of dynamic in the main. Now, that may change. We expect it to change over the course of the next 10 years with all of the infrastructure work that Jackson is mandated to do to fix its infrastructure, both by a consent decree that's been imposed in some respects by I'm forgetting the name of the department right now. You've got to forgive me. But the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, the Jackson has to fix its water and sewage, which is really bad and over 100 years old in the main and very antiquated. So there's a major, you know, there's about $2 billion worth of infrastructure work that's going to have to get done in the next 10 years. And with that, you know, you're going to have a lot of construction work, repairing streets, roads, putting in new pipes, you know, so there's going to be a short blip, maybe a 10 to 20 year blip of a kind of a growth from that infrastructure work. And that's going to draw in more population to Jackson. And so part of the struggle that we were gearing up for and still will be, you know, looking to ways and struggle over is, you know, how are those resources going to be spent, where are they going to be spent, and whose interests are they going to be spent, who's going to ultimately control, you know, those dollars. And, you know, we know most of your major contractors who are primarily white, they just want to make bottom dollar. And so, you know, they're going to try to find the cheapest, most affordable labor that they can find anywhere in the world and bring it here to work. And we understand that that will probably change some of the if they have that way, that will change some of the population demographics of Jackson. And so not looking at that in a negative sense in and of itself, you know, because one of the things is if we, we're very clear that we forge a real solid relationship, you know, with the Africans here in Mississippi, the Latinos here in Mississippi, the indigenous people here in Mississippi, and the progressive whites, that we are easily in the majority in the state and can run it, you know. So we have to welcome whoever comes in and give them a clear understanding, you know, of what is the nature of the struggle for national liberation of our, of African people here, what does that stand, what the strategic nature of it is, but how that intersects with all of our class interests, and that, you know, the working class forces in the state have to stand united against exploitation and those who seek to exploit. So that's our strategy, you know. We see some things coming down the road. There's some things that we feel by exercising enough political power with our base that we can alter and shift in some direction. We don't have any illusion that we can control it under the present, you know, dynamics of capitalism, but we do think we can shift it, and we can continue to try to press forward and do so in a way that's going to benefit African people, not only in Mississippi, but throughout the South.
I have a serious apology because I said it's 57, but is there anything you would like to add if you have could add in a minute? If not, we can finish this.
The work is going to continue. You know, losing Chokwe was a serious loss, no question about that. But we want everybody to know that the work of the Jackson Christian is going to continue. We encourage everybody to unite with us on the Jackson Rising conference that's coming down in May 2nd through 4th. You can find information about that at www.jacksonrising.org. Even if you can't come, support us with a donation or just register to get updates and stay plugged in. And then also just be on the lookout for the next piece of our political strategy in terms of the electoral politics. We'll be all going to engage it, and we will be making an announcement about how we're going to deal with that soon. So we encourage everybody nationally and internationally to stay tuned. And when we make that move, we look on everybody to support us.
Thank you very much. And once again, our condolences to Chokwe's family and Chokwe's supporters. And we will talk to you sooner than later.
All right.
We have been speaking with Carly Acuna. I would like to thank Sound Force for technical...